Hey everyone, welcome to the Deep Psychology Podcast. And today we're going to talk about some of the differences between yoga and meditation and the traps of doing yoga and what you might be missing out as a long-term yoga practitioner. So today I'm going for a bit of an informal feel. I haven't planned this. I haven't taken notes. I'm not doing this for any particular series or reason. I guess I'm doing it because this is a topic that it bothers me on a personal level. And I just think within spirituality, there are so many traps. And one of these traps I've seen is with yoga classes and doing yoga. So it's hard to really know exactly where to begin. So I think I'll just begin at the top and just discuss what am I really getting at here, and then we'll go into the details of this. So basically what's going through my mind right now is that doing yoga for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years essentially guarantees nothing when it comes to spiritual growth, when it comes to having direct transformative spiritual experiences, when it comes to seeing yourself better, seeing your mind and how it operates, seeing your sense of identity and how it operates, transcending your sense of identity, becoming identified with something that is transpersonal, in other words, with spiritual transformation, that yoga does not guarantee this whatsoever. And that it annoys me, it bugs me. And I want to kind of help you understand this and to avoid falling into the trap. So I'm going to discuss my experience because, listen, I've been a meditator for very nearly a decade now, which is a third of my life. And I've also been teaching meditation for the last couple of years. And in the time I've been a meditator, I've been involved with different groups. I've also gone to yoga classes. I've done retreats that weren't just meditation. They were also yoga as well. And so I've sort of seen the two worlds a little bit. Now, one thing I would certainly conclude is that the world of yoga is a lot bigger than the world of meditation. And I've seen that as a student, and I've seen it as a teacher. You know, as a student, when you go to meditation groups, I don't think I've ever been to a meditation group with more than 10 people there. And that I used to go to groups in my home city, a city that has a population of about 500,000 people, so not a small city. I used to go to classes there, and you would never really have more than 10 people, okay? However, I've certainly been to yoga. I've been to yoga classes, or I've seen yoga classes, or I know of yoga classes with up to 24 people there, and that isn't even really that rare. You'll also see, if you look around your city, if you look around your local town, you'll see more yoga classes than meditation classes. You're going to see more yoga centers than meditation centers. In fact, in the town that I live in, there is probably, I've not counted exactly, but there's at least 6 yoga centers, 6. Meditation centers, 0. 0 meditation centers. So that's one of the things I've noticed about yoga and meditation. Yoga is much more common, popular. And you might be thinking this is a bit of a strange point to be making. Why are you talking about the popularity of it? Well, I think it's one of the problems with yoga is that it's quite popular. Because when things become popular, they tend to lose depth. You know, the most popular food is not the healthiest food. It's actually the worst food you could get. You know, think hot dogs. chips, burgers, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, alcohol, etc. This is like the most common stuff and it is the worst for you. There's this trend, and you know, if you think of music, the worst music that you find is usually the most common stuff. Obviously, uncommon music, there's likely to be terrible uncommon music as well. But when you, it's only when you look a bit outside of mainstream music that you find real artists who can really play their instruments and they really say something sort of deep and profound with their instrument. They're not just singing about girls and nightclubbing and sex and whatever. It's like the effect of the lowest common denominator, right? Now, what I think has happened with yoga is that it's become the lowest common denominator for spiritual people, or people who are sort of somewhat spiritually inclined in a non-traditional way, right? It's very popular. It sort of promises a little bit of spirituality here, a little bit of spirituality there. But what I've found is that in being so popular, it really lacks depth, okay? This is my experience of yoga classes and yoga people in general. That they love the paraphernalia. You know, they love the yoga mat and they love going and listening to Indian music and they love the incense and they love this weird Indian statues and the instruments and they love, you know, the positive vibes. And they love the yoga teacher because the yoga teacher seems really calm and wise and all the rest of it. And they love who they meet at yoga classes because people who go to yoga classes are typically friendly and open people. And, you know, they'll end up learning some Sanskrit at some point and they'll learn chanting and they'll read books that the teacher recommends. You know, they'll start reading books, even things like, you know, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is a pretty common book amongst yogis. You know, there's a lot of paraphernalia and they tend to love the paraphernalia, right? This is an enormous trap. It's an enormous trap to just love the paraphernalia of spiritual work. And here's the thing about paraphernalia. Paraphernalia has nothing to do with your actual skill, even as a yoga practitioner, right? You could be the worst yoga practitioner in the world, and I'm probably one of them. You could be the worst yoga practitioner in the world, and you could love the paraphernalia, and you could feel like you actually know what you're talking about, and that you're making progress in yoga, and you're getting the whole thing, but really you're just loving paraphernalia, okay? Loving paraphernalia does not guarantee anything. It requires no effort. It requires no skill. It requires just, you know, being turned on by sexy sounding language and concepts and images and so forth, right? That's the thing. Yoga is an Eastern tradition. So with it becomes a paraphernalia of, say, learning Sanskrit or, you know, the art, Hindu art, and, you know, Indian culture, which is colorful and singing and dancing and Indian food and so on and so forth. So it's just laden with paraphernalia. And if it's not Eastern yoga, it's modern yoga. And the paraphernalia of modern yoga is, well, I've got my yoga mat, which cost me £30 or euros or dollars, wherever you are. I've got my nice yoga pants and I've got my nice yoga, what would you even call it? You know, I've got all the I've got all the gear. And, you know, I go in and I take my shoes off and I start to feel all relaxed and, oh, well, we get some incense on and, oh, it smells really nice and the teacher puts on some nice relaxing music for us and blah 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 blah. The paraphernalia is sort of like gym paraphernalia. You know, it's like the equipment and the clothes and sort of experience, right? And no matter what paraphernalia we're talking about, it is a huge distraction, and it is a huge, not just a distraction, it is literally, it's a delusion, essentially. Because, as I said, you can love the paraphernalia and you can have absolutely no idea what you're doing. To give an even more extreme example, you can be ridiculously overweight and you can love the gym paraphernalia. And, you know, you can love the whole thing about going to the gym and you can go and buy all the latest equipment and you can, you know, learn all about energy drinks and supplements and blah, blah, blah. And you can get up at 6 a.m. and go like a real gym goer. But listen, if you're not doing the effort on the treadmill or on the weights or whatever, you're going to be fat and overweight, and all your gym paraphernalia is a waste of time. The same thing is happening in yoga and in this kind of postmodern spirituality. And I've seen it over and over again with friends, in myself, in yoga classes in general, in yoga studios, in yoga teachers. Wow, you would be blown away by the paraphernalia obsession with yoga teachers. You know, all their attention seems to be on paraphernalia. Wow, oh my God, it's frightening, okay? So I guess if we want to just start drawing some conclusions here, yoga is popular because a lot of it is about paraphernalia, and it has become the lowest common denominator of spirituality in the West. We can also say that getting lost in paraphernalia is an enormous trap, huge trap. How is it a trap? Let me explain this, and this will sort of segue us into the next sort of section of this discussion here. Paraphernalia makes you confuse interest and sort of enjoyment with real insight, real spiritual insight. I've met a lot of yoga practitioners, and I've met a lot of people who are sort of in that world of, you know, sort of yoga and meditation and spirituality. And I have to be very honest with you, a very small percentage of them have any real insight into the human mind, into God, into ultimate reality, into what lies beyond our identity. All this good stuff, you know, all the spiritual goodies. I'm hesitant to give you a percentage, but it'd be about 10%, and that would be optimistic, of literally everyone I have met who has done yoga or meditation has ever had a life-changing insight into these matters. Okay. And to me, that is simply not good enough. It's not good enough. It would kind of be like 10% of university students making it to graduation. 10%. And I'm including teachers here. I'm including people who've been doing yoga for 20, 30 years. I include those people. Being a yoga teacher does not guarantee anything, I've found. It really doesn't guarantee anything. It can guarantee that you're further lost in the paraphernalia. It can guarantee that in order to make money out of doing classes, you have to talk about paraphernalia and you have to teach people paraphernalia. It doesn't guarantee deep spiritual insight. And according to my field studies, neither does doing yoga for 10 or 20 years. It doesn't guarantee anything, right? And you might say, well, Ross, who are you, right? Who are you to say this? You know, well, you might be right, Ross, but, well, at the end of the day, people just want to do yoga to feel good and to relax and to stretch their body out. And people do meditation for the same reasons. I totally understand that. And listen, it's true. A lot of people probably do it for those reasons. But it's really difficult to sit on the sidelines when you've been doing something for 10 years and it's enabled you to have remarkably deep insights about life that you actually struggle to put into language. You struggle to share with other people because most people would think you're crazy for sharing them, even though they're staring you right in the face. And insights that have transformed you and fundamentally altered how you see life and how you see yourself and how you relate to life and how you relate to the fact of being human. It is very difficult to sit on the sidelines and watch classes of paraphernalia, people spouting paraphernalia, people spouting nonsense about how meditation and yoga make you feel relaxed. It is very difficult. It's very difficult. It's painful, to be quite honest. It's painful to try and communicate something that isn't heard often. And it's painful to watch people thinking they know what they're talking about and spouting paraphernalia while actually really not having a clue what they're talking about, having never had a direct spiritual insight into pretty much anything. I'm going to go out there on a whim and actually say that I've never met a single yoga teacher, unless they were also a dedicated meditator doing serious meditation work, who had ever had any serious transformation. I haven't met a single one. So what does that tell you? If you're going to get involved in yoga and you're going to get involved in the paraphernalia, well, the chances of you having any real spiritual insight are slim, really, unless you're lucky enough for someone to warn you in advance like me and say, look, that this is not about spiritual insight. It's about paraphernalia and socializing and so on. Unless you have that, your chances are very slim, just according to my field data, okay? Now, let's turn our attention to meditation. Now, obviously, I'm biased because I'm not a yogi. I'm not a yoga practitioner. I've never really enjoyed it very much. I've tried it. It's not that I'm not talented. I mean, I would need to practice for a while to get any good at it, whatever good being good at yoga is supposed to mean. It has never really inspired me that much, yoga. I don't know if it's because I realized this trap of paraphernalia or whether it was because of something else, but meditation is a different story. Granted, I haven't, because the meditation world is pretty small compared to the yoga world. I've not met that many advanced meditators in my life, to be honest. Really, people who've done more meditation than I have, I'm probably 10 or 20 at most. And that was back a few years ago before I really considered myself to really know what I'm talking about when it comes to meditation. I've not met many. However, one thing I can say about people that I have met, you know, advanced meditators that I have met, is that the vast majority of them, there is something different about them, to ordinary people, right? There is something different. There's something about their demeanor, about their personality, their how they carry themselves, how they view themselves, how they view the world. There's something very different about it. And what I found in teaching meditation is that it often doesn't take very long for people to start having life-changing insights. Obviously, it depends on the teacher. And when I'm teaching people meditation, even if I don't say it explicitly and I don't sort of hit them over the head with deep realizations, my fundamental desire is to help them have insight of the kind I've just been talking about in this episode. Meditation is different. Meditation is not so paraphernalia oriented, I've found. There can be paraphernalia. There can be, you know, there can be quite a considerable amount of paraphernalia. I don't think as much as in yoga circles, but certainly in meditation circles, especially of a certain variety, there can be a lot of paraphernalia. You know, there can be all the Indian paraphernalia. There can be music, there can be incense, there can be fancy equipment, there can be, you know, the clothes, there can be the leaders, there can be the this and the that and the next thing. There can be just as much paraphernalia. But what I've found is because meditation is so powerful and so intense and can never just be misconstrued as a form of exercise, it isn't so liable to be infected by paraphernalia and confused with paraphernalia. Okay? I've found as a teacher, when students stick around for a sufficient length of time, they really start to get it. And I'm not talking years here, I'm talking maybe 6 months to a year. After that length of time, they really start to get it. They really start to have insights that I can tell are really changing them. In a way that people who've been doing yoga for 10, 20 years do not experience. Because of the intensity of meditation, because of how it asks you to look very directly at yourself and your perception and your experience, and to learn how to process it differently, how to look at it differently, how to look at it more clearly. Because it asks you to sit directly with yourself and your mind and your body and your senses, and to really experience them deeply in a way that we haven't before. It tends to produce something that I've typically do not find in yoga practitioners. And ultimately, this insight we can have, or these many insights we can have, I mean, it's insight, all the insight goes along a certain path related to identity, related to psychology, related to spirituality, related to our perception, our mind, our body, our senses. But there can be a multitude of insights. This insight is much more valuable than just a temporary state of mind. You know, a temporary feeling good, a temporary feeling relaxed, feeling a certain way, feeling connected, feeling like you enjoy Indian music or Indian food or whatever. This is life transform. This is just gold in your hands. And once you have the techniques, it is really up to you to develop that gold and to mine the ore of meditation as much as you possibly can, to get as much insight as you possibly can, beyond paraphernalia. In fact, I'm pretty certain that most people, like if you saw me walking down the street, it is true that people do comment on my sort of demeanor and my personality. That's fair enough, and that's probably a meditation thing. I've not always been like that. But if you looked at me walking down the street, other than my like sort of behavior and demeanor, if you looked at my clothes, if you looked at like sort of the accessories I was wearing, if you looked at my haircut, if you asked me what my name was, I'm not going to be walking down the street wearing Indian clothes, pretending to be a Hindu, when I'm not. I'm not going to be pretending to be an Easterner living in Delhi or whatever, or Chennai or any other Indian city or any other Asian city, because I'm not Asian and I don't live in a culture like that. I live in the West. People wear jeans and t-shirts and shirts and trousers and shoes and trainers and all that good stuff. If you looked at my appearance, you would never think that I've done 10 years of meditation by my appearance alone. You would never think I'm into Tibetan Buddhism. You would never think I've studied all kinds of spirituality from the East. You would never think it. However, if you asked me about these matters, about meditation, about consciousness, about God, about insight, I'm not saying I would be considered the wisest person on earth, and I'm not even, I don't even want to make any promises, but I can tell you right now, I'd be able to tell you a lot more than most yogis out there. Because I'm actually doing the work. I'm not changing my name. I did actually change my name. You know, I did sort of adopt a Sanskrit name, I think it was, for a little while. And then I stopped because I was like, this is bullshit. I've not changed my name. You know, I don't wear silly clothes. I don't put things in my hair. I'm just Ross. I just live my life. But the difference is that there's deep insight there that is inside. It's me. It's inside my experience. I'm not displaying it to the world like, you know, a fancy watch or a fancy pair of shoes. It's there. It's in me. It's in my skin and bones. Who am I going to show it to? There's no one else to show it to anyway. And this is what it's about. It's about living and breathing it. It's not about bullshitting yourself. What's losing weight and having a good body about? Is it about the paraphernalia of going to the gym? Is it about telling everyone that you're going to the gym and how much fun you have? Is it about giving yourself a name, like a fitness name or a gym name? I don't know what on earth what you might call yourself, but I'm sure there are people do that. It's not about that, because if you're overweight and your health is terrible, it doesn't matter. None of that matters. However, on the other hand, if you've got amazing health and you've got an amazing body and you're strong and you're fit, it doesn't matter. No one needs to know. You don't need to tell anyone about it. You don't need to display it. You don't need to you don't need to participate in the nonsense of going to the gym, right? You just do it. You just do it and mind the ore, right? The same thing is going on in spiritual circles. You can bullshit yourself for years, or you can mind the ore of deep spiritual work. And that is what meditation in its fundamental sense is. It is deep spiritual work that will, as directly as possible, as long as you've got a good teacher who has also done this work authentically, will help you mine the ore of insight. And it's less sexy, I know. I mean, it can be sexy, and it can be sort of, you know, it can become its own paraphernalia. It absolutely can. But not talking about it, not getting excited about it, not clapping your hands, not going to India because you think you're going to get enlightened, doing the actual work, sitting down, doing the work, meditating your ass off for years on end is not sexy and it is not paraphernalia. But what do you want? Do you want paraphernalia or do you want bullshit? Do you want real insight? Do you want real transformation? Do you want to really live a deep spiritual life? Do you want it to infect your entire life and transform everything? Or do you just want to run around pretending to be Indian and pretending to be a yogi, pretending to read fancy books that you understand when you actually have no idea, have zero direct experience into these matters, and live your life just pretending? You're pretending. Is that what you want? Now, if it's not what you want, you need to get out of spiritual paraphernalia. You need to get out of the echo chamber of mainstream spirituality, of mainstream yoga. You've got to get out of that, because if you don't, you're going to bullshit yourself for years. So just to round up, because I think I've said pretty much everything I want to say. You've got to do the real work. You've got to find the real work. You've got to develop a taste for the real work. You've got to wean yourself off paraphernalia, and you've got to learn to just sit and do the work. I'm not saying you have to do it on your own. You can do it in groups. You can go to your group. But ultimately, it's an inner thing. It's inner transformation. It's not about paraphernalia. You don't have to change your clothes. You don't have to change your name. You don't have to like Eastern culture. Nothing. You don't even have to be a vegetarian. I mean, listen, I'm vegan. I would love it if you were too, but that's not 100% necessary. And I'm not going to mistake that for deep spiritual work, right? But, you know, let's go to the core of what spirituality is about. Deep insight into the nature of yourself and life. Experiential, deep, transformative insight. That is the goal that we want to mine. Let's get out of paraphernalia and into inner spiritual transformation. Cool. I'm wrapping up for today. Just before I go, and I just pre-warning before I say this, I don't want you to think that I've just done this episode as an advertisement for my coaching, but I do coaching. And one of the four areas I do is meditation coaching, right? So if you're interested in real meditation and real spiritual work, you might like to have a free 30-minute call with me to have a little conversation, see if I can help you out, see what you want. I would be absolutely delighted to help. I love real, deep, transformative spiritual work. I do not enjoy paraphernalia. It's a waste of time. And if that makes sense to you and you want to explore this further and you want to really develop a deep spiritual life, then please go to the website deep-psychology.com and you will find links to book a free call with me. No obligations, no strings attached. It's just a free call, just a chat before we decide to do any coaching together, just to make sure that we're the right fit and that you want to go forward. Cool. Thank you, everyone. I will be back on Sunday with my next episode on Integral Spirituality, which is my Sunday series for this month. Take care, and I'll see you very, very soon for more.